Welcome to Dreaming Artificially, the podcast helping artists connect, share, and create. Join your hosts, Joanna and Gina, to get advice, hear artists' stories, and be inspired.
Hi everyone, welcome to Dreaming Artificially. Today we're chatting with the amazing Howard Ho, who is working in Los Angeles as a sound designer, writer, and composer. There's so much great stuff in this interview about making a life in the arts and some fantastic advice to take away, no matter which artistic field you're working in. So here's the interview.
Hello, Howard. Would you like to tell us a few things about yourself and your work?
So yeah, I'm Howard Ho. I'm a writer, composer, and sound designer. I've done writing and composing all my life. Sound design sort of came later. Each one of those things is a different and precious thing to me. So
yeah, right. So can you tell us some more about your writing?
I'm sort of like a writer in terms of like plays and musicals. But I really started off being like a journalist more. So that was sort of the heavy writing that I did was more like writing for newspapers. So I wrote for like my high school newspaper and college newspaper, and I was ready to become a journalist full time. And then I kind of swerved and did something else. I always felt connected to writing on that level, not creatively necessarily, but as a journalist. And as a composer, I've always done, you know, written my own songs and kind of wanted to be a film composer. And that was, you know, it never happened really for me. Like I composed some short films, but I always sort of kept that in my back pocket of like, I just really want to write music. And then sound design, I like never wanted to be a sound designer. It just sort of happened because that's what people wanted. And I already knew how to do music. And so it kind of has some of the sort of the same skills that you need to do sound design. So it kind of happened very naturally. But yeah, each one of those things is just, it's a part of me. And so, I always feel weird saying I do multiple things because people are like, oh, well, what do you really do? Or, you know, people want to kind of categorize you a certain way.
So is it any one of those disciplines that you would identify with more strongly than any of the others?
I mean, I think as composer, like that was my first love. That was the first thing that I did. Like I would just sit at the piano like for hours and hours, just like playing different things and thinking of different stories I could tell through music. So that probably is the most identifiable one for me. Typically, when I say I write musicals, that like encompasses both things. So on some level, that's very satisfying to me.
Absolutely.
You know, that I can do both things on the same project. And it took me a while to figure out like, oh yeah, I have both of those things and a musical requires that. And like, you know, very few other composers, very few other people who write musicals do both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Strangely enough. So yeah, so I'm like, yeah, that's me.
So I want to ask a bit about, so obviously working in different disciplines, and you've answered this question a little bit already. So are you able to work on multiple projects at once, or do you feel like you need to focus on one thing at a time to really get the best of yourself and to produce the best quality work that you can?
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally you'd be able to do both at the same time, but realistically, you know, especially as you get older, you have different brains, you know. The writing brain and the composing brain are a little different. And once I'm like really in composing, then the juices start flowing for composing. And it's totally different from writing. And so I kind of needed, like, I do have now like composing spurts where for like a month I'll just compose and compose. And I don't even know what I'm composing for necessarily, but it's just having as many ideas out there as I can possibly generate. And then other times it'll be like, oh, I have to write new pages for my play, and I have to rewrite my play, and I have to, you know, create submissions for my play. And so that, I think you have to keep things separated. just for your sanity, I do believe in kind of like this like deep dive kind of mentality. Like, you know, there's this multitasking idea that a lot of people have. But I think it's actually kind of a myth, because when you do that, you're kind of taking away the quality of your work. So yeah. I avoid multitasking as much as possible. And, you know, whatever the task is, whether it's music, whether it's writing or sound design, I say that's what I'm doing. And then try not to dilute it with doing all three at the same time.
Yeah. And that's sort of been my experience as well. And I love that you said that was something that came about as you get older, because for me, that's exactly what the experience was. I was up until even like a few years ago, I was like, I have to do everything all at once, all at the same time. And you're right, it doesn't work. So I love the idea of the deep dive. It's so much more effective. So I love that. It's great.
Well, frankly, like I used to be able to do everything all at once, but I had a bad incident with like Red Bull, and like I kept drinking and like Rockstar, I don't know, like whatever drink it is, but like those caffeine drinks, and like my body just stopped accepting it. My body, like I literally get sleepy when I drink those now. Like my body just says like, no, you don't. And so
that's and a sign so that you're getting old.
I'm getting old, but I can't pull those all-nighters, you know, so I literally have to just say like, okay, I'm only doing this now. And so, and which is healthy, I think. And again, yeah, it's better for the work anyway. So I'm happy with it.
Would you consider any of the things that you do as your, let's say, main profession, in terms that that's the activity that provides you, you know, your main income?
Yeah, I think it's sort of ironic, but sound design has become the most, just in terms of, you know, in terms of income, it's become the most lucrative one, just because people need sound designers, you know, and it's just like, it's a market demand kind of thing. There aren't that many sound designers, especially in theater. Like it's a much smaller group of people than playwrights or composers. And so I find myself much more in demand, and I get asked to do a lot of different shows, and it's at the point where I have to turn down shows because, you know, I want to have time to do other things. But yeah, it pays really, you know, well compared to other jobs within theater. Sometimes I get paid more than the actors, which I think is kind of funny, because they're in the show like 4 weeks in a row, and I just, you know, I just barely show up at the beginning. So, but and on some level, it is kind of financially satisfying to do it. But it's also sort of like, in terms of creativity, it varies so wildly. So I don't identify with it as much creatively, because obviously I'm serving somebody else's vision. There's a director, there's a playwright, and there's all these other collaborators, other designers. So ultimately, my work is part of a larger whole, which I love too. But yeah, in terms of like my own work, what I self-identify, it's not quite as out in the front. But yeah, no, I could see myself making a full-time living from sound design. You know, if I really hustled and did like, you know, shows back to back to back to back. And I actually am doing that a little bit this year. So I'm doing a show in December, January, February, and March. So that's like four shows back to back to back to back. And so in a way, like sometimes I do that too, where I have a spurt of sound design, but I'm pretty sure after I do all that, I'm going to stop that or, you know, take a break from that so that I could focus on my writing and composing.
Right. So it's interesting that you've said you're confident in being able to make a career out of sound design, but obviously it's going to leave something lacking in your career. So you need to make that space to have time to create your own work.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's one of the main things of having a career. Like when you're starting out, you just got to say yes to everything, right? Because
yeah,
it's like, you know what opportunities you're going to get. So you they have to say yes. But once you have this career and people know who you are, then it's about saying no. And, you know, you have to choose the ones, choose the projects that you care most about or that pay really well or have some kind of, you know, maybe it's a big project that people will hear about. But, you know, like, for example, all four of these shows that I'm working on back to back to back to back, all of them I care deeply about. All of them are with collaborators that are amazing and that I respect and admire. And so, you know, it would be hard for me to say, like, I'm going to do this much work and I don't care that much about it. And, you know, I know sometimes you just got to do that to pay the bills, or sometimes you do that as a favor to someone or whatever reason. And that's totally fine too. But after a while, you kind of afford yourself the opportunity to say yes or no to it. And so lately I've been saying no to more things, and it's very, very scary because you go like, well, I said no, maybe I'll never get asked again, you know?
Do you find though, and this is coming from my own experience, that I had a point where I realized I had to say no to certain things. And once I did that, it just brought so much space for the right projects to come in. Have you had that same kind of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting because the projects I've said no to, some of them were really, really good projects and I sort of felt some regret, but overall I go like, yeah, I don't regret saying no because it opened up space for me to work on something that I cared about and that, you know, no one's going to write my musical for me, you know?
Yeah.
But those plays, they could find another sound designer. So, you know, you have to look at it in terms of like, what is the maximum value you get? And, you know, if I wait to write the play, then it just loses momentum. And, you know, there are like these pockets of time that you have. And if you let that time pass you by, you know, it never comes back. I guess, you know, like Lin-Manuel Miranda talks about this when he's talking about Hamilton, how he's like writing constantly he has a song called Nonstop in Hamilton where he's talking about writing constantly because writing like he's running out of time, you know, and it's literally true. Like we are running out of time, you know? So I try to keep that in my forefront. And then, you know, obviously I work on projects when, you know, I've done the writing, but I'm not going to like take time away from my writing to do something else.
Which would be your criteria to say yes or no to a project commissioned by somebody else?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think first of all, there is the projects I work on, they're all like plays, right? And so, or it could be a musical too. So I think it has to be the playwright, you know, is it somebody that I believe in and whose work is good? And the director, is it somebody that I can work with well and somebody that whose work I admire? I mean, so for example, you know, a play I'm doing in January, I wouldn't necessarily want to work on that project. It's for a company called Sierra Madre Playhouse. And, you know, that it's an interesting project, but what really excites me about it is the fact that Tim Dang is directing it. And Tim Dang is a director whose work I saw when I was, you know, in college, and it influenced me and really shaped, you know, who I am as an artist. And so for the opportunity to be able to work with him is a huge incentive for me. And, you know, and the play is good too. I don't want to, you know, say it's not a good play or anything. Like it's actually a really fantastic play about kids who are in Hawaii during Pearl Harbor. And so like historically, it's a very fascinating play. But the real draw for me was the fact that this director who influenced me so much was now asking for me to work with him. That to me makes it a must-do kind of project.
So Howard, tell us about the Ovation Award.
Yes, I'm nominated for sound design for an intimate theater show. And it's the first time I've been nominated for any award of this size.
Congratulations then, we have to say that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's incredible. It's definitely an award that in the back of my head, I was thinking like, yeah, it would be great to get, you know, be nominated. But I didn't think it would happen for years, you know, because the people that get nominated, they're the pros who've been doing it for a long time. And, you know, when I look back, it's like, yeah, now I've been doing sound design for like 6 or 7 years, you know, it's like that. I guess I'm one of those guys now. So that's kind of a weird kind of shift in focus. But yeah, it's for this play called Bloodletting, which is like a Filipino play about Filipino Americans who go back to the Philippines, and it's a brother and sister. They're bringing their father's ashes, you know, back to the Philippines, and the sister comes to the realization that she's actually an aswang, which is like the Filipino version of like a vampire or a witch. And so she has all these like supernatural powers, and, you know, she has like this history, and her father, I guess, like passed those powers on to her. And so it completely changes how she views her father and her family and the way, you know, that like the way that she relates to her brother, who she sort of like has been tormenting with her powers, even though she didn't know it. And so it's sort of like this metaphor for family relationships and grieving. But what's cool about it for sound design is that it takes place in the Philippines, which is like a tropical country. So it's got all these jungles, and so there's a lot of atmospheric stuff. It's like constantly raining and there's like creatures. So as a sound designer, I'm like, you know, I'm like in paradise, because I can just do all these sounds. And also because she has all these supernatural powers, I can create these whooshes and bangs and stuff that, you know, happens when she kind of does something magical. It's a play that definitely like people love, but just even more than that, it's a play where I'm needed, you know. Some other plays, some other directors, they don't sort of believe in sound design as much, or may not, you know, be as focused on it. But this play and this director, they really asked me to step up. I remember one time, you know, the director is very sarcastic, and he said, you know, oh, is the speaker broken? And I was like, oh, speaker? No, I don't think so. He's like, well, then why can't I hear the sound? You know, and like, I hadn't like pumped the volume high enough for him, you know? So it's like,
that's a nice change as to, you know, when your music gets mixed with a film and it's, you know, mixed to the very, very bottom of the mix. It's like, where's my beautiful cello line?
I know. Yeah, exactly. Right. And like, that's for sound design. It's like, it's even worse than that, because usually you know, there's like dialogue and other stuff. So you want the sound to just disappear, you know, completely. But yeah, so really I almost feel like I'm being nominated for working with the director, you know, and working with the writer. Like, they wanted the sound to be this way. It wasn't necessarily like my artistic genius or something. I just made it happen, I guess. But yeah, but you never know what shows get nominated. Like, this show was really small. It was like 60 seats, you know, and it's like in this tiny little theater. It's not even in LA. It's in this little village called Atwater Village, kind of adjacent to LA. But there's just something about it that caught on, and it got nominated. And I had no idea, as I was working on it, nothing about that process told me like, oh, you're going to get nominated for this. You know what I mean? That's sort of the part of it where you have to say yes to everything. Cause again, you don't know what's going to be the hit show. You don't know what's going to, you know, what the audience is going to like. I remember I was working on another show at the same time, and so I almost said no to Bloodletting. And, you know, I could have just said, well, I'm working on another show, I'm not going to do it. But I looked at the schedules, and it just so happens that none of the dates conflicted. So it was just like complete. It was magic. It was kind of like the stars aligned. So I said, well, I don't actually have a real excuse, so I should just do it. And I do not regret it at all.
Definitely not.
So what advice can you give up-and-coming artists when it comes to making connections and getting your work seen and heard?
You gotta find the people who believe in you. And I mean, I guess it first starts with believing in yourself, but I've always found people who believed in me, and you know, a lot of times they were mentors and people who I worked with who took a chance on me. You know, that to me, that never goes away. That's always important, because ultimately they're the ones who they're going to give you the opportunities that you didn't get before. They're going to put your foot in the door. So I think there are those people in your life who kind of act as the connectors. And I think those are the important people to work with, to nurture that relationship, because that'll pay off again and again.
Yeah, that's really great advice. So you're also making lots of amazing connections through your YouTube channel. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh yeah. So YouTube, it actually is this completely new thing that I'm doing, but it's connected me to a huge audience that I never knew existed. And so just to give you some background, you know, I play piano, and I actually wasn't a music composition student in college. I actually was music history student. And so my background is more sort of analysis and historical, analysis. And so when I look at music, I kind of have more of a analytical background, I would say. When it came time to start a YouTube channel, I decided I wanted to explain Hamilton. And I sort of came up with this huge theory about like how Hamilton's music was operating, you know, and just the music, because I think people look at the musical and think like, oh, the lyrics are great, you know. But I wanted to just focus on the musical content, the chords and the melodies. So then I created this video series all about that. And it's kind of exploded like beyond what I thought, because all these people who are fans of Hamilton are now watching these videos, and people who didn't know anything about music theory or music history are now watching those videos. And I never even thought that it was for like, you know, random people. I thought it was for people who are like music nerds, kind of like me, but in actuality, it's like people who like Hamilton. Just there's such a strong community out there of Hamilton lovers. So I kind of tapped into something I think is really cool. And what's more important though is that since I want to write a musical, these are new connections now that will feed into my work. And hopefully some of that audience will stay with me as I'm developing my musical, and hopefully will later become my audience, you know. But this is an audience that didn't exist before, you know, before there was the internet. Like, I would never be able to reach these people. And now, you know, now I can reach thousands and even millions of people just with like doing something in my living room, you know. That's amazing. So I would say that for any young artist today, like, you have to invest yourself in social media and in YouTube or whatever thing you choose, Instagram. There's no way of reaching people so quickly. I don't know. Yeah, that to me, it was like a wake-up call. Like, you don't have to wait for people to let you do stuff. You know, you just do it.
I think that's, you know, a career in the arts in a nutshell, really, isn't it? If you sit around waiting for someone to give you a job, it's not going to happen. Yeah. You have to make it happen yourself.
Yeah, you have to do the work. And you know, like, you have to create work for yourself to do. It's almost like you have to assign yourself work. Like, I have all these different like things that I do. Like, I do like a music listening exercise, and I still practice Hammond, you know, which is like,
yeah, doing much better than me.
But you know, like, I have to practice like a harder, like increasingly harder versions of it. Like, I have to play it in every key, you know, and I have to like move the metronome like much higher than it was originally intended, you know, and all that stuff. Like, just by sticking with it, I've been able to maintain a music practice, you know. And similarly with writing lyrics, it's like I practice rhyming, you know, like kind of, it's almost like freestyling a little bit, but you know, you just have to keep those muscles strong. Otherwise, one day when somebody does ask you to do it and you, and you're not ready, you know, that would actually set you back, you know, so you have to be ready for anything.
Absolutely.
So where can people go if they would like to find out more about you?
So yeah, people can find me all over social media. I'm on Instagram. My Instagram, I think, is Howard WHO or Howard Who. They could find me, they could go on my website, howardhomusic.com. And you can find me, you can find my musical, which is called Pretendo. It's a musical about the early days of Nintendo coming to America. And it's kind of a fantasy, kind of Wizard of Oz, but with an 8-bit world instead of Oz. So you can come check out more information about that if you go to facebook.com/pretendomusical. That's P-R-E-T-E-N-D-O musical. Hopefully as I develop this musical, you'll get more and more updates and check out what I'm doing there. And my YouTube channel is youtube.com/Howard Ho Music, and you can find all my Hamilton analysis videos and my hip hop cover videos there.
We'll put up all the links as well on the show notes.
Thank you very much.
Great. So thanks so much, Howard. It's been really great chatting to you.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast. And you know, just let me know if there's anything else you need.
We will do. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Dreaming Artificially. Join our Facebook group at Artificial Dreams Creative Collaboration. That's ArtyficialIAL. Or visit our website at artificialdreams.org.